I am correct.
193, 194.
It'll be 195.
This is number 195.
Yeah.
We got five more weeks till we're at the 200
almost
mark.
Almost Halloween? Our Halloween episode, maybe?
Almost. That's probably a great time. I can plug Halloween.
Yeah, you should.
Okay, so...
It's your favorite holiday?
It's my... Well, it is one of my favorite holidays. I like it. Okay. But one of the most requested podcasts that we do, or we did last year, and probably one of our best listened to podcasts, was the Halloween episode.
Yeah, or what was it? The spooky stories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so essentially what we did is we asked people to send in your weird, wild, freaky stuff that you found in the woods while you've been out, either hunting or scouting or even camping. We'll take that as well, but... We want to do another episode of that. So Halloween is a Thursday, I think. Nah, it might be a Friday. But I think the 30th, we'll have an episode go live. So we want to do the Halloween version of the Big Hunt Guys podcast. So I'm asking people, if you have a weird, wild, wacky story that happened to you in the woods. That you
Bigfoot.
Anything.
Ghosts, aliens.
Ghosts, haunting. Yeah, weird stuff.
Anything that goes bump in the night when you're in the woods.
Anything. Scaring you. Graveyards. I mean, we had some super weird ones last year. I think we had some photos last year that people sent that we debated internally in the office to like, what in the actual hell is that?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that one that was like the old person in the...
Dude, yeah, that was creepy.
Do you remember that? I'm going to have nightmares about that tonight.
Yeah.
But yeah, send us your weird stories. Photos is awesome. You can shoot those over to reach us at gohunt.com and just put in the title, Big Hunt Guy's Halloween story.
Yeah.
And then just include as much detail as you can in the body. And we're going to go through all of them and read your guys' weird wild stories.
That was really fun last year.
It is really fun. Yeah, because there's some weird stuff that happens. I've got a few of them and I've told them. Mm-hmm. I haven't had any new weird ones that I can think of. But
I'm going to try to make it my goal to figure out what's your next hunt you're going on between now and October. And I'm going to like... Creep around your camp and make a bunch of weird noises
yeah.
and scare you so you can talk about it on the podcast.
I'm going to take my kid hunting maybe the end of October on a deer tag. But other than that, I think I'm home for the month of October.
I think you definitely should be.
Yeah. So send us your Halloween stories. Again, reach us at gohunt.com. Do you want to hit us with promo?
Hit us with promo. Whoa, my mic's going to fall over. I set
that up for you.
You did?
Yeah. Sorry.
Gosh.
I thought it was pretty stable, but that mic on top looks like it's got some wobble in it.
Yeah. I mean, we are in the thick of hunting season and now's the time. I mean, I think as hunts, you know, go later in the year, obviously elk hunt always a good time to hunt with friends and family, but like, I feel like always these like late season deer hunts are always a great time to, you know, get out there and hunt with someone else. So you want to share the love and pass it on to some of your buddies, family, friends, and get a Go Hunt membership. That way you guys can collaborate on your hunt plan. When you're doing a bunch of e-scouting, you guys can start trying to figure out what tags to pick up next year. You guys can share waypoints when you're online. When you're offline in the field, you can Bluetooth your waypoints, mm-hmm. share it while you're out hunting with your buddies, get on the same page and pick up a Go Hunt membership. And when you sign up, use promo code podcast and it'll get you 50 points back to the Go Hunt Gear Shop, which is $50. Cause like right now I've actually been using it a ton, the mm-hmm. research side. Like already again, we always talk about it, but I'm already planning for next year.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to pick up some tags right now.
That's
There's a bunch of leftover opportunities mm-hmm. still out there. And I've been, you know, looking at the leftover preview list for certain states and trying to figure, okay, what are some good tags here? Mm-hmm. Can I try to pick them up? I tried to pick up one last week and was unsuccessful.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang.
I know, but I'm going to still try. I'm going to keep going. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. So like you can still use research stuff right now, filtering, you can use draws to start prepping for next year, you know, dive in, look at some old app strategies. I sent you over a couple comments people had about they're already looking at hunts for next year on our app strategy has been commenting on. So yeah. And then you obviously have, you know, Go Hunt maps. And that's the big thing right now is, you know, making plans and again, sharing with friends. Like Lane and I are going on an elk hunt here this year. So we're going to, you know, I've been doing a little e-scouting, sharing mm-hmm. some waypoints with him and trying to collaborate on a hunt plan. So
yep.
Great time of year. If you don't have a membership, pick one up.
Yeah. And I mean, that's all I've done. So I guess the rest of the podcast, we're going to kind of recap, my last couple weeks in the elk woods. There was four of us. There's Lorenzo, Omar, Porter, and myself. We spent a bunch of time up in Wyoming trying to tag out on a bull. Archery elk hunting. So we're going to recap that. But I got home last Saturday, I want to say. That's pretty much all I did the entire way home is look out across the landscape, maybe observe some antelope, see a muley here and there, and just start to plan and prep for next year. Last night I sat down and bought my bonus point and my preference point for Montana. Bought my preference points for Wyoming for the species that I can buy them for. So I bought those for deer and antelope. And that's pretty much all I've done.
So by the time this podcast goes out, it's be too late, but did you pick up your bonus points in Montana?
I did, yeah, last night.
Okay.
Yep, I did both of them. I did Wyoming and Montana, both.
Yeah, I did all my brother, my dad, my brother's friends.
Yep.
Jumped all in and called them up.
Yeah, my kids were all busy last night at activity, so I was sitting there on the couch just kind of watching TV, and I had my computer open, and that's what I was doing, was researching Montana draw units for elk for next year. Already looking at them, already looking at unit profiles, looking at maps, looking at public private land, just like doing a full eval of like, what can I do next year already? It's pretty crazy. Crazy how quickly that flips.
Can you adopt me so you can buy my points?
Oh, man, they're expensive.
Yeah,
I know. You know what's crazy is the preference point for elk in Montana is what, $100?
$100.
And then $25 for bonus point. I'm like, it feels like those should be switched, but I guess it wouldn't matter because you have to draw one to have the other, even a chance in the other one. But $125, and then 41 for deer in Wyoming, 31 for antelope in Wyoming. And I also, which I've never done, I applied for, what is it, the super tag?
Oh, yeah.
Up there? Yeah,
I did. I always try to throw like one or two chances.
Yeah, I picked
in.
Up one. It was like tail end of my checkout, and I was like, yeah, what the hell, why not?
Yeah, I logged into my dad's account because I was getting him points. And like sometimes he does the points himself. For some, certain states, he remembers how to do it. And other ones, I do it. And I logged in his account. I was like, Dad, you purchased 10 super tag chances for a bunch of these different species in some of these states? He's like, yeah.
He did?
Yeah. I was like, might as well. And I'm like, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Just throwing his name out there. He's like, I just want to draw a sweet tag. And you can't draw if you don't apply.
Yep. I just did one for elk, just one. And I was like, yeah, why not? Yeah. Based on the number of moose I saw in the last 2 weeks, I should have bought a moose one or like maybe 20 or 30 of them just in case. But yeah, I figured why not?
Yeah.
I figured I'd skip morning coffee today, not buy that. And I would just use that in lieu of my morning coffee fee. But, I'm still using it. I'm already planning and prepping for next year. It's sad to say, but this is when we were recording this, it'd be the last day of September, which is a major bummer for me. Probably exciting for you. Are you kind of happy to see September go by?
I have I don't want this to come off sounding bad at all, but I've gone the entire month of September without hearing an elk bugle. And I kind of miss okay with that in a sense. Cause like I have been seeing bulls when I've been out scouting a bunch and they haven't bugled.
Really?
Yeah.
They were
earlier. I saw them like earlier in the late part of August, early part of September. And since then I haven't seen any elk anymore.
They moved
They moved around and I'm not in, quote unquote elk country. But yeah, usually like when I'm out scouting deer, I usually hear a bugle, but this year, based on where I'm at and stuff, like just haven't heard a bugle. So I went all of September so far. I'll probably end up now like saying that I'll probably go up this weekend.
Yeah, probably.
And probably hear one rip.
Second cycle cows.
Yeah.
I think I've learned more about the elk rut since I got home than I did prior to leaving in the, previous 20 years. I've just been reading a lot about it because we'll dive into it, but it felt like such a hit and miss and kind of a lackluster rut. It felt like, and I keep going back in my mind, is it just because of, timing? The weird thing is it was like everywhere I went kind of felt the same. Like I only had maybe a couple mornings I would say where it felt like, an elk rut. Like the elk were really bugling and, we chased them and had some close calls. The rest of the time it really felt lackluster. Like I'd hear a bugle or two after dark or maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours before light, I'd get to use the bathroom and hear an elk bugle and think, yeah, okay, I'm going to be on in the morning. But just did not get into, like bulls that were just going full ham, and everywhere I went, it felt like that. Now in saying that, like I've just been replaying back in my head going, was I just not in the right area? Cause I was talking to guys, I know everybody I met out there, we exchanged in reaches and a lot of those guys we kept in touch with. And, I'd hear from a guy, hey, yeah, we were really in him this morning. I talked to some guys that were like, yeah, we heard 100 bugles this morning, wow. So like, it definitely seemed like there were pockets, mm-hmm. and which I know is the case, but it just felt like generally a lot of people that I talked to, and then just in my own experience, it felt like kind of a lackluster rut. So I've been reading a lot about the rut since I got home. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of interesting.
First, I want to go back a second about like me not hearing any elk. Did you see what I commented on Go Hunt yesterday?
No.
I kind of like blew up in the comments.
No.
So Omar posted a little video. He sent it to Lane and I.
All the elk bugling. Omar did get into him the last couple of days.
Yeah, so we finally got into him. Mm-hmm. And so I commented on there. I'm just totally being funny again. Mm-hmm. Don't take this any wrong way, people. I was like, are they bugling to let us know that the mule deer rut is going to be starting in 30 plus days? That's what I commented.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Just a warning. Like, hey, everybody, it's coming.
Yeah. That's why the elk were bugling on Omar's hunt, because they were, you know, letting me know that the better time of the year is coming up, the mule deer rut.
Yeah.
So good on the elk for letting me know that, hey, when September's here, that just means to me mm-hmm. that the mule deer rut's coming. So I do enjoy the rut. Elk rut because of that, because that just means, hey, November's coming up.
You're right. Yeah, it is coming, man. It's kind of approach. I'll be hunting elk in November, so back to elk.
I mean, I will be too. I don't have a mule deer tag in November.
Yeah.
So
yeah, in fact, I didn't have a mule deer tag this year, and probably the best animals I saw were bull moose and a couple mule deer. Mm-hmm.
But back to the rut though.
Yeah.
And then we can dive into your hunt and lessons learned and everything. But like, wasn't it, we were talking before, like on paper,
supposed to be the best rut in ages. Yeah.
So, yeah. Like everything was lining up. The moon.
Yep. So fall equinox was the 20th, which is you've got equal daylight to dark, right? And everything I've read since then has been like within 5 to 10 days, either side of that is kind of like prime time. And I will say that the best day that we had was the 20th, the morning of the 20th, and then midday. Leading up to that though, maybe the day before was pretty decent, but you know, either side of that, it didn't really feel like, and again, it's so hard because I keep going back in my mind, was it location or was it just, and I think there's probably something to that, but I talked to enough people that it felt like they were having similar experiences that I was. It just didn't seem like the rut was really firing. We did talk to a guy that said he was actually a guy from Illinois. Hopefully he won't mind me saying that, but and I won't say his name, but we talked to him one day, midday. And we chased some bulls at the top of this ridge. We'd had a couple close encounters. He was in there on a bike, and we talked to him. And he came out August 27th. So he'd drawn this tag. He came out August 27th, which is several days before opener, yep. September 1st. And he said that the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, they were ripping.
Really?
Yep. He said they were absolutely ripping, which is weird because the 7th was a full moon.
Okay.
So you wouldn't think, you know, it'd still be pretty bright on the backside of a full moon. I had suspicions because I think I said on a previous podcast, I was out the tail end of August and, you know, I was seeing bulls with cows. Like I saw one really big 6 point with probably 43 cows and calves. I saw him run off another 6 point. You know, I called in two bulls on the 28th of August.
End of August.
Yeah, dripping. Which is unusual. I mean, you know, I was in Southern Utah. It could happen, but it like I had some like this like little bit of a pit in my stomach. Like, I don't know, this doesn't feel right. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Anyway,
so, did you have any hunch after doing that? Like maybe I should modify my plan, or you're like, this has got to be an anomaly still going to be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, there's four of us, right? So trying to get schedules. I mean, those guys had like pretty tight schedules on what they could do. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it was kind of set in stone as far as like days away from family, days away from work. And it was pretty well set the 13th to the, you know, I ended up going almost through the end of the month, but yeah. And reality in the back of my mind, I just keep thinking, sure. You know, there's elk bugle on the 28th of August, but there's a pretty high bull to cow ratio in Southern Utah where I'm at. I'm in a limited entry unit. Sure. Yeah. You know, there's a couple bulls that are going off, but it's probably the best is yet to come, you know, but man, if it was, I sure didn't find it, but I know people that did. So, yeah, but I've learned a lot about the rut. I've been reading a bunch. I don't know if you want to get into that now or later. We can get into it later.
No, we could dive into it now.
Yeah, there's actually a few things I want to talk about. So one of them being, you know, the rut. So I've been reading a bunch about it. For a long time, I'd always thought for some reason, the number that stuck in my head is that when cows come into estrus, they're in estrus for about 32 hours is what I, for some reason that was like to the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I went back and looked at it. I've been reading and I read a bunch of different sources. It actually says that, they're only in estrus for approximately 12 to 17 hours. It's a pretty tight window.
Yeah.
Right. And if they haven't been bred, they can second cycle, and it's approximately 21 days. So that's like the average, right? It's normally between 18 and 28 days post if they didn't actually get bred. So I thought that was interesting. I was like, man, 12 to 17 hours. I mean, that would make sense on why some days it's an absolute ghost town. And then, you know, the last day and a half when Omar's there by himself, he gets into a bunch of bulls that are just absolutely rutting their faces off. Right.
Yeah.
So it really is like where you're at in those 12 to 17 hours. And if you think about the space of a hunting day, I mean, how much ground can you actually cover? Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, so that was kind of weird.
Yeah, what if she comes in at like 10 o'clock at night, 12, 17 hours later, that's, you're looking at what, 2, 3 o'clock?
Sure.
And, then she's done.
Yeah, done.
So like you would have one chance at that like obviously that hot cow with a bull trying to go to that hot cow. And then obviously there could be other cows too at the same time. And they're not all going to go at the same time too. So.
Right.
Yeah, it makes it kind of really interesting.
Yeah. Other things I've learned since I got home. So I found a source that says the first breeding phase of the rut takes place between the beginning and the middle of September. This is when 3-year-old and older cows come into estrus.
3 years old and older.
Older. Yeah.
So okay. So you're older.
Your older cows go into estrus first.
First.
Okay. Yep. And then your younger cows cycle later. And
is that probably because then they want to be bred earlier so they know when to have a fawn potentially?
A calf.
Yeah.
So
they're smarter and like, hey, we need to drop at this point with the young ones.
Yeah. So there's a few reasons that I pulled some of them up. So neurological triggers, when the estrus cycle is generally triggered by the changing photo period. So we know the reason why, right? The central nervous system must be mature enough to initiate the release of reproductive hormones. So older cows have a fully mature brain and reproductive systems, allowing them to respond to the seasonal light changes at the earliest possible time.
Do you have a source for this for people listening?
I don't. I could go back and find it, but, yeah, we might have to do it in a fact check, but I thought that was interesting in that like your older cows are going to, and it makes sense to me logically is to think about it. Right. So your older cows are going to cycle first. Genetic disposition or predisposition, like many species that are genetic component of the timing of puberty and estrus, older cows are already genetically predisposed to cycle at an optimal time, a trait that they will pass down to their offspring. So another reason why. Another reason why older cows is they are typically kind of that like not like your second year cow, but like your third year to like not super old either, right? But generally they're the most the best body condition, right?
Yeah.
So better body condition, obviously they would have the ability to cycle sooner, right? Because hormone production, all part of the whole process, their body condition. So optimal body condition, kind of that mid-range of cows, would also cause them to cycle sooner.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting.
All making sense, yeah.
Yep. And then
it's really interesting.
Yeah. The other thing I read, it suggested that there may be like a bit of a rest period between when your older cows have cycled and then your younger cows will begin to cycle. And again, you're still talking within, you know, mostly between a 5 to 10 day window of that equinox is what they say. But I honestly felt like to me, it felt like I was in that rest period.
Mm.
Based on people I talked to, people were like, yeah, they were ripping the 9th through the 12th, right? So to me, I'm thinking, okay, and since I've gone back and read a bunch, you know, maybe that is your older age class of cows, right, that are coming into estrus. They're earlier, less pressure in the field, and there was a lot of pressure. Good on people. People are getting after it, and it's awesome. Like, we talked to a number of people that ended up, you know, shooting a bull. I did see one. I didn't see it, but I saw a photo of a really big bull that got killed, which was awesome. Some guys from Minnesota, I believe, shot it. But
Shout out, Minnesota.
Yeah, actually, shout out.
Mm-hmm. My homeland.
That's it. Yeah. They killed a really big bull, like a really pretty big bull. But a lot of pressure, like a lot of people out and about, and I would assume that's probably another contributing factor to kind of the rut experience I had. I think a lot of people probably saved their days and it felt like it, like you could feel on the 22nd, 23rd, you could feel the woods like kind of emptying out. You know, you would drive past a trailhead or you'd drive past an area where people are camping and parking. And like, there were definitely people pulling out like the 22nd, 23rd, right? I think most people took probably like the 10th through the 20th off. So the guys that I did talk to that were there earlier, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th, even the week prior, I think you probably had one older age class cows cycling earlier. You know, bulls were rutting better and less pressure, so they're not getting as bugled at by hunters, right? So I think you just probably had a little bit better rut. All this is like adding up for me for like future planning.
That's kind of what I was going to go next is like, so knowing some of this information, obviously you've been doing this for a long, long time. But how would someone who is listening to this or is looking at some of these, you know, studies and learning about this, how could you take that knowledge and apply it to, you only have, you know, 7 days to elk hunt. How would, like, obviously, like you said, you, it's not, and that, maybe it's not the right phrase. It's not like an art. It's not, the rest, so, not an art, but it's a science.
It's
not an exact science. At the same time, like you can say like, oh, it's going to be on paper the best, but obviously there's other factors too. So like, how would you combine all this going forward again to plan out when you might be in there? And also maybe knowing too, like, hey, everyone understands typically that this date to this date, like you said, like the 13th to the 20th or whatever, 13th to the 22nd or whatever, is normally when a lot of people go. Like, would you lean earlier then? Or would you still use this data and be like, well, maybe we just didn't hit it right, and maybe next year would still be the same thing? Like, how could you use this data then to plan a future hunt next year?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for one, it would cause me going forward to look at the actual tag that I had. So we just had general season tags, right? It's an over-the-counter permit for Wyoming residents. I would say 95% plus of the license plates that I saw were guys from Wyoming that were hunting their own state. A lot of residents out there hunting, which totally makes sense. They can buy a tag and just go over the counter and get after it. Not a ton of non-residents. I saw a few, some Colorados and then some Midwesterners. And then actually, this is a rarity. I think I only saw one Utah license plate besides my own, which I was like, wait, what? This is weird, you know? So I think it would cause me to look at the type of hunt. So if it is a general season unit, if it's an easy to draw tag, it's a tag that's got a lot of pressure. I would do it differently. I would go earlier. Looking back on it. I would say, you know, like the 7th through the 15th, something like that. I would do that looking back on it. And again, hindsight's 2020. And I think I've told a number of people since I got home, I've had a lot of people reach out and be like, hey, how'd it go? And I've been like, yeah, I got my ass kicked, you know? And they're like, oh, sorry to hear that, you know? But, and I've had to own and been like, yeah, like 25 years plus elk hunting. I'm still making stupid mistakes. I still make dumb mistakes. And I think probably my timing, within the whole perspective of this hunt was probably not the best choice, to be honest. So I would go earlier based on the fact that one, I think you have less pressure in the field because especially this year, and I hyped it up. I was like, this is going to be the year. The 20th of September is going to be freaking epic. It's going to be a Jurassic Park out there, right? I think most people probably thought the same thing. They probably listened to a moron like me and were like, hey, I'm going then, right? So I think I would take into account like that fall equinox. I would still look at the 10 days, 5-10 days either side of it, but based on the pressure and the amount of people. And then again, I didn't anticipate there being as many roads and like trails and access points as there were in this unit. I would look at that and I would adjust accordingly. So I would try to be there before herd bulls have kind of established harems, because we did get on a lot of bulls that it felt like we're just blowing locators, you know? They were like, hey, I'm over here. You know, we would limp up on them, and we got up on a number of herds that had cows with a herd bull. And it just felt like, man, I'm not really amped up enough to come in and fight. Like, I just kind of want to push my cows off, you know? So I think if I went earlier, it would yield itself maybe to bulls being not totally herded up, right? So they might be a little bit more curious to come into a cow call. I didn't hear a cow call. I heard one cow call. The entire hunt. I heard one cow that I know was a cow because it was like 2:30 in the morning. Came through camp. Probably a cow and a calf, but I heard one cow call. Other than that, I did not hear a cow call that was an elk. And I saw cows.
Really?
Yeah, which was interesting. So earlier, I think that cow call might be more effective to like lure bull as those bulls are out cruising looking to build harems.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I think you'd have less pressure for sure. And then just based on the fact that kind of what I'm learning, you know, some of those older middle age class cows are going to be coming into estrus, and you know, they're probably a little bit healthier than the young. I just think it'd be, you know, probably easier to hunt that time of year. So that would be my take home is okay. To look at the tag that you have, consider hunting pressure, consider access, consider the full moon. If you know,
any weather choice thought process?
Yeah, I mean, we got hit with some bad weather. I mean, I had probably 3 days that it rained pretty good. We had one really good lightning storm, which I want to talk about too here in a sec, but, snowed one day pretty good the entire day. So that's another reason, you know, early season earlier, maybe 2 weeks earlier, it might've been a little bit better weather window, and it can go either way. It could be too damn hot, you know, and maybe they're only active at night, but, yeah, I would just say take home for me is I'm going to look more intently at the unit, the number of permits, the access roads, trails, and I'm going to kind of plan ahead and try to pick an area where I think is maybe a little less pressured and maybe in an earlier phase of the rut. So here's the other thing is like, normally I've hunted areas where, let's say the elk weren't talking, like they weren't on most of the days that I was hunting, right? I always feel like I have a backup option. And I've talked a lot about like, oh, you got to be adaptable, right? If you're going to be successful, you're going to have to maybe hunt water or hunt a wallow, or you're going to have to be able to glass and go spot and stock. This unit did not, area that we hunted did not have a lot of glassing opportunities. It's really thick, like way thicker than it looked like on a map, like matchstick thick. Mm. It was really thick. A lot of deadfall, tons and tons of jack straw, you know, like real crappy hiking. So that kind of took that off the table. Wasn't really an opportunity to spot and stock and glass. The other thing is that stage in the rut, you know, you're talking September 19th, 20th through the 25th. It's not really prime time for wallows. So like I would find wallows. Like I sat one day, probably the second to last day before I left. I just didn't have anything going on during the day. Didn't get a bull bugling. And I thought, you know, I'm going to pop down and just check out this meadow, take a look at it. It's in a really, really expansive, thick patch of timber. And I thought maybe this is a spot where I could catch something coming in and out that's going to feed, and, you know, walked into it. And there's like three of the just most cherry wallows I've ever seen in my life, but they haven't been hit in 3 weeks. I mean, nothing in them. So it's not like I can sit a wallow.
Yeah. Can you explain to people how you determined that they hadn't been hit in a while? Because I think sometimes you go into a spot, you see a wallow, you see some mud on the ground, but like explain what we would determine as has not been hit in a while, what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, the water's like pretty clear. Mm-hmm. There's like that nice silty bottom to it. The tracks that are in the mud, like they've got the crust to them, you know what I mean? They've seen some sunshine, they've dried out. I'm not finding like fresh tracks in and around the wallow. You're not seeing the like imprint of a body having laid down on its side, or even the imprint of an antler. A lot of times you'll see it. You won't see those marks where they'll get down with their eye guards and or their brow tines, I guess, and start to like dig it and throw, you know, roots and shit all over, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, an active wallow just has a look, right? Sometimes it's like cloudy looking muddy water. The mud in and around it is like kind of blown out and fresh. You're finding like fresh tracks, fresh droppings. So all these walls that I was finding, I mean, it was like clear water, nice silty bottom, you know, the tracks in and around it were definitely like sunbaked, you know, didn't have anything fresh. I was finding elk sign, but again, the elk sign that was in that meadow looked like it was probably 3 weeks old.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of answered one of my follow-up questions would be like, if you experience the same thing again, okay, like how would you modify your hunting tactics? And you've kind of been explaining it, like it wasn't conducive to glassing. Mm-hmm. So you got to throw that one out of there. It wasn't conducive also because the time of year to sit wallows. So is there any other thing you potentially could do now looking back on it that you would maybe modify a strategy? If you went in an area, bulls weren't talking, you're obviously not hearing cows. Like how could you find success still besides for maybe just covering a lot more country? Or
I think that's really all you got. And you know, I gave it hell. You know, I was driving roads at night a couple nights towards the end of the hunt, just trying to find elk that were bugling.
Were you trying to bugle at night too?
Road bugle. Yeah. So the night before, two nights before I left, I think I got back to camp at like 9:30, 10 o'clock. jumped in the truck and I probably did 50, 60 miles that night. Every little logging road that I could find that looked like it was closed off at the end, I was pulling out, you know, on the end of it and bugling. I was using Go Hunt maps, pulling up any kind of canyon country that I thought looked good, might have some elk in the top end of it. I was trying to hit that country and road bugle at night, and I just wasn't getting responses, you know? So I tried that. I know people that did well. I mean, we talked to some guys from Colorado that were hunting it, and I pretty distinctly remember, this is actually an interesting point, but we're talking to him, knowledgeable guy, hunted the area multiple times, obviously in Colorado resident, hunts, you know, OTC, hunts Colorado, high pressured areas. And we were talking to him, sharing ideas. I'm like, yeah, this is what we've been doing. And, you know, I was kind of doing where I could, like my style of hunting, like I'm going to go into this drainage here and I'm going to spend one or two nights bivved out and, you know, hopefully get on a bull, follow him. And it wasn't like, I didn't really find anywhere other than like that I could go in as a non-resident, cause I can't hunt wilderness. Right. So mm-hmm. there were wilderness areas that I'd have been just like stood there and drooled over, and they weren't huge, but they'd been big enough that I could have created some space.
Yeah.
I'm not good. What I've found is like, I'm not good at road hunting. Like I'm not good at day hunting. Like I'm really not, like from a perspective, like a lot of pressure and, a lot of access and like those constant run-ins. And I'm not good at that style hunting. Like I think the only reason I ever kill an elk is just because my ability to like maybe stay a little longer or go a little further and like get away from
people.
Be stubborn, you know? So it felt like in a lot of cases, like I couldn't outwork people. You know, which is fine. There were a lot of people that were outworking me, but they were doing it conducive to the environment we were in. Yeah. Right. So I remember talking to this guy and he says to me, he's like, well, he said it pretty vividly, it stuck with me. I've been thinking about it a lot since I got home, but he basically said, you guys are just trying too hard.
Interesting.
He's like, you guys are just trying too hard. He's like, you know, we killed a bull two nights ago. He's like, you know, we road bugled at night, and he's like, this bull blew up, you know, 300 yards off the road. Good roads, like good smooth roads, you know?
Really?
Oh yeah.
So it's not like you're just like, oh, the most remote.
No,
scared,
man.
Scared to take your truck down there type of road. Nope. Like,
yeah. So he's like, you know, we ended up killing this bull. He's like, I actually walked through pretty close proximity to another guy's camp that had left that morning. And, you know, we went up and called in this bull and shot it. And he's like, he probably wasn't 500 yards from this guy's camp. You know, I talked to another guy one morning. We had a plan. We were going to go up and through a saddle and hunt kind of a drainage where we could access. It was probably a mile hike. You know, we pull up the road and there's a guy already kind of sitting there where we were. And we pull up further and, you know, we get out and he comes walking up and we chit chat and he's like, hey, just so you guys know, he's like, there's been a bull right here above, right in the saddle, like essentially right in the saddle. It's 400 yards off the road. Mm. He's like, he's been bedded in there with a herd of cows and calves like the last two nights, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, people were figuring it out, you know, mm-hmm. they were finding elk that were like right off the road, you know, and trying to get into them. So that one's really stuck with me. He's like, hey, you know, you guys are just working too hard.
I think that kind of applies to a lot of different hunts too.
It does.
Like the more you're out hunting, and I think the more experience you might gain, like, oh, I have the edge. I have all this stuff thought, all this experience working at bulls. I know where to go, how far to go in, how to call. Mm-hmm. And you're doing all these like advanced things. But sometimes like maybe you just, yeah, you're working too hard at it and you just need to take mm-hmm. a couple of steps back. Like, okay.
It's hard to do.
It is. Cause like, you're
figured,
just like,
all that
experience, all that experience tells you to do what you've normally done. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you're not, something's not working, take a lot of steps back, go back to the basics of, hey, let's just go out a quarter mile from this road, see if we can turn up or mm-hmm. hunt in different places that you normally wouldn't. Like, but everything else tells you not to do that in your head.
It's really hard. Yeah. And if anything, this was like a real humbling experience for me in the fact that, I'm not as skilled or good at that type of style of hunting. Like it feels foreign to me.
I've always said,
I don't like
the
feeling. It just doesn't like, I mean, when you're walking down a logging road, that's like obviously been closed recently because it's a great logging road and you're walking into it and it's light, right? And you're walking down this like well-maintained logging road and there's probably five or six camps at the top end of the drainage. You know, you run into a couple guys and they like, yeah, we heard a bugle over here and we're going to go hunt it. And it to me, it just doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't feel right. I'm like, this isn't the feeling of hunting elk that maybe I enjoy. Cause I didn't really.
Yeah.
But in saying that, like if you're going to hunt that type of area, and there was definitely some nice bulls, And guys killed some bulls, and they were figuring it out. Just for me, as I'm like, man, I'm not good at that. Like, I'm gonna have to figure this out if I ever wanted to do another hunt like that again.
So can I ask you, let's say the terrain was slightly different. So obviously I don't elk hunt very often, so I want to ask this question. So let's say the elk are not talking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It can be typical in an elk hunt, you know, maybe it's earlier, maybe it's later, but they're just not talking, but you can glass a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
How would you approach it if you could glass up some elk, whether you see some satellite bulls moving through some timber, open pockets, and then they go back in the timber? Like, how would you approach that scenario if you could have glassed them up? Like, what would you do next? Like, okay, you saw an elk, saw it moving in the timber. They're not talking, obviously. What would be your tactics then to try to hunt bulls like that?
Yeah, I mean, spot and stalk. So basically what I like to do would be, try to put them to bed. So like if I can put them in a patch of timber, mm-hmm. and, you know, Omar had this experience the last day. He and I were messaging back and forth, and he's like, yeah, I think I know where they're bedded. What do you think I should do? And I was like, at that point, like if you have a good idea on like where they're at, right, they're going to spend the day, then I can kind of use my predictors of what I think elk are going to do. So like if I've got an east facing slope and it's close proximity to them, they're probably going to feed out there in the afternoon because it's going to shade out first. Yep. Right. Yep. I'm thinking thermals. I'm trying to pick a lay of the land, like, okay, this contour or that valley looks to me like the most likely spot that those elk are going to feed out with their face in the wind, in the shade, in the mm-hmm. evening. Right. And I've done that quite a bit. I killed a bull in Wyoming with my brother a number of years ago. It was early. This bull had a bunch of cows rounded up. I watched him push them into a patch of timber. It was about the size of, you know, a couple football fields. And I looked at it. I was sitting there with my brother, and we were kind of kicking ideas back and forth. And I just said, yeah, I know where those elk are going to go. They're going to come. They haven't watered this morning because I know where the water is. And at light, I glassed them up. I'm like, they're going to go to water in the evening. The water's here. This is the direction of the slope. This is the wind. I'm going to go right there. So I went over there 5:15 in the afternoon, whole string of cows feeds out right below me. I've got the wind in my favor. Bull comes behind him and I shoot him at 55 yards. So to me, like if you can glass an area, you can kind of start to put together the piece of the puzzle. Like, where were they? Did they water? Which mm-hmm. direction are they going? Why are they going that way? Where are they going to come out in the evening? So I like to play that long game, right? Like build the whole story and then figure them out if I can glass. But this, I couldn't glass. And here's the thing is there were country. I was looking over the maps and I've looked over it more so since I got home. There was country that it looked like, yeah, this has got some area that it looks like I could glass. I just didn't know if there was any elk in there. And I didn't want to spend like a full day to go over and look at it
mm-hmm.
to confirm one way or the other, which I probably should. I just kept thinking, nah, it's going to turn on. They're going to bugle.
Yeah.
Once they're bugling, man, it's on like Donkey Kong. Like I'm going to get into them, you know? So, it was a major learning experience.
Did you come to full draw ever?
Never did. Never got to full draw. So we had some close calls. So I'll just run through real quick. First day Omar and I went up, we went to a spot we'd kind of been recommended. We looked at it on the map. First day we hike in there and this is like one of those things where you look at a map, you look at the lay of the land, you spend all your time e-scouting, and I think it's great. You should do it. But when you get out there, there's like no replacement. When it got light that first day, I was like, holy shit, this is thick. This is like dog hair thick, like pine, right?
And sometimes you can like use that data you collected for other hunts, but other times it still looks, it's still a shot in the dark either way. Yeah. Like, okay, so how it looks on the map is totally mm-hmm. different, but it's like, sometimes I wish you could like, okay, I'll take a photo of this right now and come back on my maps and remember, okay, this looked like this and it was actually just the thickest dog hair pines ever, mm-hmm. even though the map looks open. Is that like that other place? But you still never know.
Yeah.
So but you can kind of collect the data, but you just don't know until you get there.
It was a
bit
of shock that first day, but we went wandering through it. Threw out a couple bugles. We had a bull respond. We worked up the ridge on him. Cow call a few times, bugle. And, you know, bull just caught me with my pants down, essentially. Like, he came in. He was, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think I was taking a leak, actually. But okay. he came in.
Those new go hunt pants?
Yep.
Ooh.
Which were great, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he came into like 40 yards and ended up seeing me before I saw him. That was another thing that I learned on this hunt is that I have probably been too aggressive in cutting distance. So hear a bull bugle, and I would try to cut as much distance as I thought I needed. And there were times when I would cut it too tight, and I would be like on top of them. Mm-hmm. And like my first call, they would be in my lap, and they would end up busting me, like trying to move towards them. So I think I would have been much more patient and just like posting up, calling, and being way more patient and just like waiting and waiting and waiting and seeing before I actually made my next move. Because I've been so used to chasing elk, like I'm trying to catch a herd, and I'm going to end up eventually catching them like 10:30, 11 o'clock before they bed. And then I'm going to pull that bull back to me. There were times that probably 3 or 4 times where I cut that distance way too quick, like 8:39 in the morning. And I was like on top of the herd, and I'm calling, and like they're in my lap and they see me before I saw them. So, which is what happened to that bull. You know, we ended up walking down to like a big meadow that I wanted to check out, had a big water hole in it. We run into a guy with a crossbow that's in there hunting. We chit-chat with him. He said he saw 2 cows and a calf, and, we talked, and we were like, you know, we're here early. Porter and Lorenzo were going to show up for another 2 days and 3 days. We thought, you know, we're going to spend the next 3 days like building out as much intel as we possibly can. So that when those guys
sound smart.
Yeah. So when those guys show up, we can actually be like in them and hunting them hard. Mm-hmm. Right. And we'll know where all the bulls are rutting. Anyway, so we pulled out that afternoon. I was like, let's just go check out a different area. I had another area that I wanted to look at. So we pulled out, went to the end of a logging road, and that evening, checked it out. I'm going through my notes here. We did glass. So that evening we actually popped out onto a knoll, and we ended up glassing a bull with 3 cows. We were like, cool, there's definitely a bull in there. Didn't hear any bugles, but we thought at least there is a bull. So the next day, we went out on the end of that knoll, and we kind of sat there and glassed, didn't hear much. Mid afternoon, we ended up hearing a bull bugle. We dropped it on him, and the same thing. I probably got to 100 yards, you know, and I'm still moving through the timber. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm calling for myself at that point. Omar's with me, but I'm doing the calling for myself. And I had this thought. I knew this bull was pretty close, but I thought, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to cow call. I'm probably going to throw out a bugle, and I'm going to move up like 20, 30 yards so that I cut that distance so that bull still thinks I'm back there, right? Which is what I did. And it, I think what ended up happening is when I made that additional movement, he was closer than I thought. He ended up, I think, seeing us, but he drifted through at like 94 yards.
Can I ask you on that?
Mm-hmm.
I think when so it's obviously been a long time since I, you know, was a resident of Montana and actually like archery elk hunted a little bit back in the day. I think for me, when I was out elk hunting, I always like, it was so hard for me to judge, is that bull close? Is that 300 yards or is that 150 yards or is that a half mile away? Cause it sounds loud. And so I believe when I was elk hunting back in the day, I would always set up way too early. And then I was scared to move forward. Cause I was like, they're going to see me. They're going to see me. Like, how do you really judge like sound in that situation to know if you're safe to go close? Is it just a gut experience?
Yeah, I think it's just gut experience. And you're, if you knew the amount of time that I spent Googling that exact question, since I've been home, like how far can you hear a bugle in thick timber?
That's a great thing. Like, if you could figure that out, like,
so yeah, I mean, we did some Go Hunt Labs last year. That's one that's on my list. I have a note.
Oh, like you're talking about like you going with
I
want to
go
tube?
Out with a bugle tube
and then have Omar
different types of environments. One side of a canyon, other side of a canyon, facing a direction, facing the other direction.
Dude, that's gold mine.
How much aspen, open aspen, you know, regenerated aspen, thick super lodgepole pine, bugle, move in, bugle, move in. Like, I would love to know and have some like exact numbers on what it sounds like at different distances and actually have a metric for it.
That'd be great. We gotta do that.
Yeah, that's on my list.
Okay,
so to answer your question, it's just gut. And you know, there were so many times where Omar, camera guy, you know, bull would bugle, reporter was with me, and the three of us would be like, which direction that was, and like those two guys would be like, it was that way. And I'd be like, it was that way.
Yeah.
You know, so then you're almost like needing to hear it again to try to pinpoint it. But I don't have a solid answer for you other than close is close. Like, mm-hmm. you know, close, I can hear close, especially in that thick timber. Like if they are bugling and I can hear them real clearly, I'm like, okay, that bull's probably within 150, 200
And maybe
yards.
Then too, you might be like, okay, I can hear a stick. Like maybe he's mm-hmm. taking a step and like, well, that's close. If you can hear like a stick making a noise, and then you can assume, but yeah, trying to figure out that bugle and that comfortable distance to go. Cause I feel like if you just like, oh, I hear him, but he's a half mile away and you sit there, he's like, I'm not, why would that bull move?
Yeah, he's not coming.
He's like, oh, I'm totally fine here. Mm-hmm. I got cows here, bro. Like, right. why would I come to you? But like knowing that, and that'll be a great test.
I think it also depends on where you're at. So if you're at the top of a ridge, you're going to hear better, right? If you're down at the bottom, you hear him piping off, he's probably closer, right? Mm-hmm. So it depends on the topography. It depends on where you're at, the vegetation, how thick it is. I mean, we were hunting some areas that were burned over and I was like, obviously that sound's going to carry better than it is through like a bunch of live timber, right? But I don't have like a hard answer for you.
I think it'd be great too to do this test, and we got to do it now.
Oh, I agree.
And then even doing that night, like does sound carry further at night? Mm-hmm. So like if you're trying to do this night bugling thing, like, mm-hmm. okay, how far away is that? So you know in the morning to try to pinpoint, hey, we need to be generally right here.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
I've wanted to do this, but it's been increasingly more so on my mind since I got home. I was like, I would really love to have some metrics. Mm-hmm. Like, what does it sound like? Do you know what I mean? Depending on the
go
type
on different
of
terrain. Yeah. You're saying
vegetation.
Okay. Sorry. You can go back to the story.
Yeah. No. So we that bull kind of came in, he drifted by it like 94 yards and then just kind of skirted us. He was all by himself, went quiet. We walked down the end of the ridge, sat there in the afternoon, had a snack. And then in the evening we heard a bull pipe off and he was basically back where we came from. So made a loop on him. And that night we actually, like, he was bugling pretty good. He had a group of cows and calves. I didn't ever actually see. All I saw was tracks. So I knew he had cows and calves. I knew he was a big bull. He was chuckling, herd bull. We closed in on him. Omar did see him briefly. I think we probably were within 150 yards, but he just wouldn't commit, right? He was like, I'm content to like just kind of push my cows. He wouldn't answer a cow call. He would answer a bugle, but it didn't ever feel like, hey, I'm pissed that you're mm-hmm. in the neighborhood, right? We were like approaching shooting light. Like I'm running out of time here. I just decided like I'm gonna go at him super hard. So I just took off through the bush and I was like stomping through there. I was breaking sticks. I was like crashing, covering as much ground as I could. You know, I would stop and like rip off an aggressive bugle at him and gauge his response. And he was just like, I don't care, man. I'm going over here. But he never bumped, never spooked. He just kind of fed off. Next day, I tried to get on that bull. Didn't really have any luck that day. Lorenzo pulled into camp that night. So the next day, he and Omar decided that they were going to pop down and try to hunt that same bull that we were on. Those guys ended up seeing a bunch of cows and calves, but, you know, nothing for bulls. What do you got?
Can I talk about you guys' hunt logistics here real quick?
Sure.
I think you guys need to share in reaches before you get out in the field.
We did. I
had an in reach message from Lorenzo. He's like, hey, what's Omar's in reach? I need to figure out where we're supposed to go. I just laughed to myself. Right. I'm like,
To my credit, the last thing I said before we left with everybody in a meeting was make sure everybody has everybody's in reach.
Yeah.
Right. So, in fact, as I was driving, I had to buy a Zoleo because I lost my DeLorme.
Oh, no.
I've
had that thing forever. I know. I'm surprised that thing was still running.
I know. It's still working.
You had the old school giant one.
Yeah,
still.
The old school yellow actual DeLorme. Yeah, old one, right? Ended up losing it. And so I got to like Sandy area, like northern Utah. I was like looking around. I was like, what am I going to do? I definitely have to have something. So I stopped at Shields and I bought a Zoleo, which is $150, and their plan's a little bit cheaper. It's only $50 a month for unlimited. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I bought one of those, but before I actually lost service, I sent all those guys a message with my number and said, this is my Zoleo number. You have to message me before I can reply back, which I found out. I can't directly message a InReach unless they message me first. So once they message me, then I can open this line of communication. I can talk back and forth.
Because you have a Zoleo or something? Yeah.
Yep.
And so, the only reason I wanted to bring that up, because I've dealt with this before too, or like the day of, and we're like, shoot, we haven't done the InReach thing yet. And we have to try to get everyone on board. So I think it's a really good thing just to, especially when you're doing kind of what you're doing, you're exploring. You might not know where you're going to camp yet. So like, hey, this is the waypoint on Go Home Maps for camping, because you guys obviously are changing your plans ahead of time because you're there multiple days. So like, yeah, just having that coordination of, I always try to screenshot it too and have it on my mm-hmm. phone and put in a little folder of all the contact information from buddies.
And we must, I mean, he found our camp, no problem.
So that's good.
Yeah, he rolled into camp late that night. The next morning, he and Omar went and hunted that area where we got on that bull that evening. Minimal luck. I think they did see like 35, 40 cows and calves. They saw a couple of young bulls. I still had that day before Porter came into town, so I went and hunted another area that I thought looked good. And that morning, again, I'm hiking in the dark. I'm like hiking along an old, logging road, completely decommissioned. I'm hiking in along it. It's not shooting light, but I'm like, I'm going to post up on this little corner. I'm going to throw out a bugle. So I'll throw out a bugle. No reply whatsoever. So I'm like, okay, no biggie. Give it 5 or 10 minutes. I keep walking and I'm walking down the road and all of a sudden I see an elk bump and he's like coming in. Mm-hmm. He's 40 yards and he just sees me. I see him and he blows and I'm like, shit, it'd be really nice if you gave me like a heads up or if I'd have waited like 20 minutes or a half hour, but you don't know. It's like, do you sit there for a half hour with nothing at mm-hmm. prime time or do you keep moving? So I kept moving.
Yep.
I go around the bend, we hike up onto this face and bull bugles back, work up on him, bugles back. We get into a little shouting match between the two of us. And at one point, sticks popping, he's coming in, but just wouldn't commit. And I never did end up seeing him, but he was close enough that I knew he was right there. Like I could hear sticks popping, bugled at me real aggressive. I'd bugle back at him, but I just like couldn't lure him. And then, he ended up drifting over the ridge and kind of continued into the next drainage. And I chased him. And I did finally end up seeing him, but he had about 15 cows and calves. He was a small six, but he pretty well shut up by like 9, 10 o'clock. So he wasn't bugling enough that I could keep up with him. That night we pulled into town. I met Porter. I had an area that I was like, I want to go check this area out. So that first night, Porter and I went up and made a loop on an old logging road. It stormed that night and it was super windy, so we couldn't hear much of anything. So we went for probably a 2.5-3 mile hike, didn't hear anything that night. So rather than stay there, I decided, hey, let's go for a drive and we're going to hit this other big canyon that I'd heard about that I thought would be good. So we went and did that, camped, and that first morning with Porter, we just dove off into this canyon and we spent the entire day like working this big giant canyon. And again, like we heard some bulls bugle, but it was just never, it was like a one-off, you know, it was like, mm-hmm. Hey, I'm here. We'd be like, cool, you're here. We'll try to get close to you and bugle at you and just nothing. Right. So spent that day doing that. As we were hiking back that night, just before dark, we ended up glassing up a bull. We were 2.7 miles away and I could see that this bull had antlers with my SIGs.
2.7?
Yeah.
Dang.
So I could see with my SIG Zulu 6s that this bull had antlers. And I was like, that must be a pretty decent bull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. And he's got some cows and calves and he's up in some like open meadows. I'm like, well, that's good. You know, he's up in some open meadows. At least maybe I'll be able to see him. So we got up really early the next morning. We made a run at him and we got all the way down in there and never heard a peep, never heard a bugle. Couldn't get him to spawn. No cow calls. Didn't see any elk that day. It was just like such a hit and miss. That was like the continual story of this whole hunt was just hit and miss. That's what maybe we should call the film, hit and miss.
But hit and miss.
There hit and go. Mostly miss. The next day we decided, hey, let's move. Let's go do some bivy hunting, So mm-hmm. I had this other area that I identified that looked like it had the most potential to like get out away from, other hunters and roads and really like get out into them. So we backpacked in. Ended up staying that night on this little knoll, and that's the night we had the cow come through in the middle of the night. So she chirped at us and I was like, that's cool, at least there's a cow in here, right?
Yeah.
Got up in the morning at 5. I'm getting my camp together and at like 5:30 I hear a wolf howl, which I hadn't heard. Which was interesting. And it was pretty close to camp.
A little eerie feeling kind of.
I wasn't too worried about it.
No, just this sound of a wolf. Sometimes yep. like, ooh, that's, it's like an odd sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's a super cool sound to hear, but yeah. It's just like, ooh.
Yeah, it was a little weird. Porter was like, what's the...
Yeah, how'd Porter treat that?
I think he was a little weirded out by it. Yeah, I don't think he was like super amped. And he was like, can we shoot a wolf? And I was like, I don't actually know. I've since gone back and checked. I'm like, yeah, I think we could have. Not that I would have, but...
Yeah.
It was like kind of weird. To like hear that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But That morning it was late in the morning. So it was like 7:38 in the morning. We just had been hiking and bugling and calling. And finally we get a response, right? So we ended up chasing, this herd, and they go all the way to the top of this peak. And there's two bulls. There's a satellite bull and herd bull. And we're hiking along and I bugle, he bugles. I'm like, okay, they're closer than they've been, you know, we're right on their heels. And, I probably take 5 or 10 more steps up this steep face and I look up and I'm like, bull coming. So there's this bull and he's a 5-point. He's coming down the ridge right at us. Mm. And I kind of stoop over, like keep a low profile, right? I just kind of duck over and I'm trying to get an arrow. And Porter just like pulls off everything. Like, I mean, everything is coming unbuckled.
Yeah.
Pack's coming unbuckled. I felt like at one point he undid his bino harness. You know, he throws his pack off. And the whole time I'm looking at him out of the corner of my eye, and I'm just like, stop, stop, stop.
Yeah.
And he thinks I'm saying, get ready, get ready, get ready. Anyway, so this bull pulls up to 45 yards and he's kind of got a tree between me and him. And he's like onto us, like he's hearing us, you know, he's seeing us. And he gave us like probably a 2 or 3 second look and then just like pinged, he was gone. And I turned to Porter and I was like, what are you doing? And he's like,
it's a learning lesson now.
He's like, do you shoot with your pack on? And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, that makes total sense now. But yeah, that was just like, I hadn't had a conversation with him to be like, hey, and he's not archery elk hunter. This is the first archery elk hunt. So like, he doesn't know the ins and outs of it. Right. He's right with me. Camera guy's with us. So he doesn't know like what the protocol is. Like, hey, if there's a bull coming, what you do, he doesn't know that you have to be just like absolutely dead motionless still. Pick your moment. You know what I mean? He doesn't know I shoot with my pack on all the time. So that was kind of a bummer. The herd bull ended up going up and over and disappeared. And, so that was kind of it was a fun morning. It was exciting.
That's one you wish you could have back.
Oh yeah.
Like, I've had like, just what are the odds you could have had that conversation earlier, like, hey, yeah, we should put their pack on. Let's do this when we get in a situation.
Yeah. And again, it just goes to my, it's like my, I overlooked it. Like I overlooked saying like, this is how this should work, or this is how this is, we're going to do this. Yeah. Right. Like that was just my inability to communicate things. I just assume too much. Right. And you know what they say when you assume, right?
Yes.
They make an ass out of you and me. Isn't that what they say?
That's what they say. That's what Porter usually says to us.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'll work things here. Go on.
Touche.
So it came back to him.
Yeah, touche. So that was kind of that morning. I'll just skip. So, you know, we had some rough days in between. Didn't really hear much. Probably the best day that we had was the 20th. Okay. So like the 19th, we're backpacked in. You know, we're probably 3.5-4 miles from this trailhead where we left from. And that night we didn't hear much of anything, but I found this little meadow and it was kind of seated in the top of this drainage. And, you know, we're kind of in a burn. There's just green meadow, a little bit of water. So I was like, hey, you know, this would be a good spot to post up. I think we should just set that for the evening. So we did. Didn't have anything come in, but it smelled really elky. But I just thought this is a good opportunity. At least maybe we'll draw something to us. But slept that night up on the ridge in the burn. By the way, also, I heard so many trees hit the dirt.
I know. I think we've
so
had the
many widowmakers.
I think we've had this conversation before about like camping in burned areas, and
I'm
it is so
you,
scary.
I never used to think about it that much at all, but I'm telling you, every time now, like I'm laying out my bivy and my tarp, I'm like looking at every tree in the neighborhood, trying to decide which way is one leaning.
Yeah,
you know, is it on the other side of a tree, and if I go on that side, it's gonna, you know, at least protect me from it. But yeah, we heard of many trees during the trip. Just like I heard one day that was an absolute ground shaker. I mean, I don't know where that sucker hit. But it hit hard. Oh. It was like, God, it was so loud. But yeah, we slept up there that night, got up early in the morning. We kind of limped out on the end of this ridge. I threw out a couple bugles and we got some bulls going below us. And there's three bulls. I'm like, sick. It's the 20th. This is prime time.
Oh yes. They're reading the script.
We are going full tilt. So we charged down off the hill after them. One bull peeled off and actually looped back up on the same face that we were on. Only he, you know, wrapped around the end of the knoll. Two bulls had gone down through the drainage and they were going up the other side. So we got on those and we just kept at them, and they were bugling enough, you know, with a little bit of coaxing that they would keep bugling. So we're keeping up with them. We're keeping up with them. We come up over this little rise and we're kind of out in the middle of this burn. And I hear this commotion. I look across the face and there's two cows and a bull, and they're running like right at us. They're coming like beelining right down through the drainage. They're going to come right to us. I'm like sick. So I post up, get my arrow knocked. I tell Porter, this is going to go one of two ways. If they go above us, he's dead as can be. Like, we have the wind. We're awesome. He is dead to rights if he goes above us. If he goes below us, it's going to be dicey. Like, mm-hmm. if he gets out into a lane that we can actually draw and shoot, we'll probably get a shot. But if he cuts in below us, we're smoked. So he picks the only direction that he needs to survive, right?
Oh,
so
of course.
Two cows come out ahead of him. Porter's ranging. He's like 38 yards, 38 yards. Two cows are completely broadside in the open. He's got probably 6 feet before he breaks like right out broadside into the wide open. And those two cows picked our wind up and bailed.
No.
So they took off. It's like a locomotive going down through the woods. I look back to my left or to my right, and here's this other cow that's come in from the other herd. She's come in completely on her own. She stands there at 38 yards by herself, just like, we got the wind in our favor. She's totally just like, hey, what's going on? Has no idea. I tried to talk Porter into shooting that cow like for probably a solid minute and a half.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, you should shoot that cow.
What was he saying back?
When he tells the story, he's going to say what I said to him was, do you want to shoot that cow? And I might have said, do you want to shoot that cow once? But then I was like, you should shoot that cow. You should shoot that cow. Which he was like, no, I don't want to shoot a cow. But so we ended up passing her. But, you know, we had her dead to rights. But we could still hear the herd bull bugling, right, like up in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So we wait for her to clear. She clears, and we bomb off. And as we go up the other side, we're approaching, and this bull's getting pretty close. And then all of a sudden we hear another bull bugle, and I was like, that sounds like a dude.
Mm.
So I think some other hunters had probably come up and over from the ridge, which good on them. You know, they were doing the same thing we were. They bugled, that bull bugled. And I think what happened is that bull just kind of got pinched between the two of us, and mm-hmm. he eventually was just like, I don't want to deal with either one of them. I'm going to take my cows. I'm going to roll out over the ridge. So he dipped out, went up and over. So that was kind of the morning. You know, we sat there, we ate some lunch, we talked like, what do you want to do? And camera guy needed some new batteries. I think we'd only taken in like two nights of food. So we were like, yeah, we'll probably go back and get some more food. It's obviously pretty good heating up in here. I was like, let's just bomb out. So we hit the main trail and we're hiking out, and I'm hiking down through the middle of the drainage. I'm probably 200 or 300 yards out ahead of those guys. They're coming down the trail, and I like walk into this little clearing. I look to my left, and there's a whole herd of elk just like strung out right in this little meadow. So I hit my knees, and there's like seven cows and calves. They filter by, and then I'm thinking, there's a bull. Gotta be a bull, right? So there is, and he comes through, and he's just like this little raghorn 4-point. But he was probably 90 yards, which I wouldn't have shot. But I was like, dang it. Why couldn't that have been 40 yards and a big bull, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But, so that happened, and I was like, well, that's cool. We make the loop. We're continuing down the trail. We're probably only another 300 yards down the trail, and this bull just blows up in the bottom, like right in the bottom, right off the trail. He, like, noon. It's like 12:05.
Again, you guys are working too hard.
Yeah. I mean, he just fires off, and he is like screaming. He's fired up. I'm like, sick. So we get down there to him. We got the wind in our favor. At one point he had to have been no less than like 80 yards, like right in the bottom. And we're just kind of up out of the bottom. We got the wind in our favor. So we exchange some bugles back and forth. I can't get him to quite come in. I try some cow calls. Doesn't really work out. And then he decides to turn. He starts back up the hill. So like in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, this is a bull. He's got cows because it's a herd bull. He's chuckling. He sounds like a big bull. He's probably got some cows bedded up here or somewhere on this face, on this knoll. There's a little bench. I'm looking at my maps. I'm like, yeah, he's probably bedded in that little pocket, and he's probably ditched out to come down and get water midday. He's just bugling like, hey, I'm going back up to my cows, right? So we start up the hill after him, and we're exchanging bugles. I work in underneath him, and at one point he pops over the ridge, and I look up through the timber, and he's 103 yards, and I can see him. And this is like one of those times where like your perspective is not theirs, right? So yeah. I think what happened is he's standing on the ridge line and he's looking down into a pocket and he can see probably a whole hell of a lot better than I can see looking up when I'm down in it, right? So I don't know if he saw me. I don't think he smelled us, but he's just like, I'm not going down there, right? So he dips back up over the ridge. In the meantime, I got another bull that's starting to pipe off. So I'm between the two, right? Which is best case scenario. You got two bulls that are like bugling back and forth and you're in the middle. That bull comes all the way to 46 yards and I can see him walking down the trail. He's coming right towards me and he's got like 3 feet. I got this perfect window. I've ranged this diagonal log. It's 43 yards. He's in front of it.
Okay.
I can see him walking to the timber and I'm like, release on, arrow on. I'm like, he's going to step out. I've got the yardage. I'm going to stop him in that clearing. And for whatever reason, he just like stops short. He's like 4 steps, 5 steps from breaking that window. And he just stops and stands there and then takes a few seconds. And then he turns and he walks back up the way he came. He hits the ridge and he walks up the ridge. So just kind of dipped on his own. So it was just like this close. This close. He was a like a decent six. Nice bull. So that was a bummer. We hiked out and that was kind of like really the rest of it. So, you know, I spent a few more days with Porter and those guys. We ended up packing back in. We would hear a bull after dark, maybe one before light, but we just never really got it rolling. You know, we had a massive thunderstorm blowing the one night. Which is actually about the time that we found out. So did you hear these two hunters from Colorado?
Yeah. Tragic.
Yeah. So
super sad yeah, situation.
Andrew Porter and Ian, Stasco, I believe is their name. 25 year old kids. Looks like they got caught on a storm on the 12th of September. We found out later that it looks like they got struck by lightning.
Yep.
Which is a major bummer, but, we got caught in a storm the one night. So it was popping. It was lightning and thunder enough to the point we talked to Omar and Lorenzo and those guys. They were on the mountain. They were going to bivvy out at 11:30 at night. I guess they said the lightning was hitting so close that they were so uncomfortable that they decided to hike out.
Just left their stuff.
They left everything. So they left camp. They left packs. They left everything and hiked out to the truck.
You know, it's pretty serious when you have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scary situation.
Yeah.
Lightning's always freaked me out on the mountain.
Have you ever been caught in something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been reading a lot about it since I got home.
There's not much you can do besides for just like hope you're lucky or get out of there. But then I'm thinking too, like, is it safe walking around too when it's all like going off? Like, yeah, it's a scary situation, especially for like a high alpine mule deer hunter when you're kind of camping on those ridge lines and you're kind of up high and like that's where the storm really rock. And I've had so many times where it's like so bright, it's like flashes of lightning crack all around you. It's windy. I'm grabbing onto a teepee trying to hold everything down and then like tossing my gear away, like thinking like, oh, maybe this aluminum trekking pole is like attractive. So you're just like chucking it as far as you can in the dark and just like, yeah, you just hope and pray that something's gonna go right. And
yeah, so I've ridden out a bunch of lightning storms, not in the best way, as it turns out. I look back at the history, you know. So like that night, we're laying there in our bivvy and tarp. Each of us have our own tarp. And Porter's kind of off my head. He's back there, and he's like, "Hey, you all right? Like, you feeling comfortable here?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm feeling all right. We're good." And he's like, "What makes you?" At some point, he was like, "What makes you think like we're okay?" You know?
Yeah.
And so I was listening and kind of the old adage, like, how far away is it? Right.
Yeah.
So here's some interesting information. So for me, I've always just been like, I'm going to see the flash of lightning. I'm going to
count.
Yeah. Right. So, I pulled it up. So some statistics, basically, it's just like the educational portion of the podcast. Yeah. Right. So this is called the flash to bang method, right? So you spot, you hear the flash of lightning, you start counting the number of seconds until you hear the sound of thunder. Divide the total number of seconds by 5 to get the distance in miles.
Say it again.
Okay, so count the number of seconds between the flash of lightning and the sound of thunder.
Yep.
Divide that total number of seconds by five. So
that's what I've never done before. I've just counted it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a little more, now you know a little bit more, that little extra, right? So 5 seconds between the flash and the sound means it's typically a mile away.
Okay.
That would be the math, right? 15 seconds, 3 miles.
Okay.
Okay. Instantaneous. You get flash and the crack of thunder. It's very, very close. Right. So this is why this works. I thought this was kind of interesting. Lightning's instantaneous. Thunder takes time to travel. The sound of thunder travels 1 mile in approximately 5 seconds. The speed of light is much faster than the speed of sound. So, which is why the difference, right? I thought this was interesting. So it says, if you can hear thunder, you're already probably within striking distance of the storm and you should seek shelter immediately, as lightning can strike as much as 10 miles away from a thunderstorm.
10 miles. Wow.
So I always thought, like, oh, if it's a mile away or 3 miles away, like, I'm good to go, you know, which I would probably still do the same thing. But I do think it's interesting. This was interesting to read. I did a little bit more reading. So thunder's created when lightning passes through the air. I thought this was super cool. The lightning discharge heats the air rapidly, causing it to expand. The temperature of the air in the lightning channel may reach up to 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 5 times hotter than the surface of the sun. So immediately after the flash, the air cools and contracts quickly. This rapid expansion and contraction creates the sound wave that you hear as thunder. Did you know all that?
Mm-mm.
No? I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway.
So when this was all going on.
This is going on.
Well, when this was happening with the two people from Colorado, and I was looking it up and like following stuff on Facebook, and I actually had this screenshot, and maybe I don't know if I can find the source of it.
Oh, but yeah.
I found this on a Facebook group and actually saved it to my computer before, and I wish I had the source, but like, it's titled Backcountry Lightning Risk Management. And it says, okay, here's 0, which is low safety, high risk, all the way to 10. The only place that's actually safe as possible is in a building.
Mm-hmm. And it says, vehicle, they said.
Yeah. And it says here, no place outdoors is safe from lightning. Lightning is an objective hazard. Your behavior can reduce the risk of that hazard harming you. And what I thought was kind of interesting, obviously it shows like all these mountain peaks are like the highest risk. Like the tallest one's going to be higher risk. The second one down is going to be still a risk, but a little bit better. And the best, one of the best, better routes is, you know, gullies are better than ridges. Mm-hmm. And then it even showed an example of a cave.
Not good.
Which I saw people commenting on Facebook too. Like, I always thought a cave would be safe. Like, going to a cave. No, that's not very high risk. That's a risk level 1, which according to this, 10 is safe and 0 is extremely dangerous. And so that's extremely dangerous to be in a cave in a lightning storm.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we should touch on that. One other thing I wanted to say. So this is in regards to sound, right? So typically a sharp crack or a click would indicate that the channel of lightning is passing very close to you, right? If the thunder sound is more of a rumble, it's at least several miles away. So you can kind of differentiate, and you can think about the times you've been out in a thunderstorm. This would make sense. It seems like common sense, but like that low rumbly, you're probably okay. Like it's further, but that like loud popping crack. I've even been in a lightning storm one time, like high country mule deer. Like I could feel it.
Do you ever have like your hair starting to stand up? And you know you're in danger, you're in danger mode then.
For sure. Yeah. Like I could feel it. And I remember just laying in my bivy sack thinking, I guess if it hits me, like that's it. Like I won't feel anything, you know what I mean? Yeah. But so to that point, what else did you have anything else in there that it said?
No, one thing also, again, I don't have any sources for this now, and I don't have this Facebook thing pulled up, but I was reading too that when you're hunting with buddies, camping or whatever, it's best to separate distance between you so that if one person actually gets it, the other person can try to see if you can, you know, deal with the other person then, rather than you both getting it, which is unfortunately kind of what it sounds like might have happened to these two.
So it says at least 20 feet apart.
How much?
20 feet.
20 feet.
It says at least 20 feet.
I would think it'd be a little further.
Yeah, but you might as well,
might as well go a little further, put some distance between you and your buddy. Mm-hmm. That way, if something does happen, you know, you can maybe handle it.
So what I found is basically said, ditch all metal objects, immediately get rid of any items that can conduct electricity, trekking poles, metal frame backpacks, crampons, anything like that. Keep them 100 feet away from you. Mm-hmm. Move to lower elevation, get off exposed areas like peaks, ridges, high ground as quickly as possible. Lightning most often strikes the tallest object in an area, which I think most people know.
Yep. So avoid the tallest trees. Yep. Like if you're in smaller trees and there's taller ones around you, that's probably your better bet to get in the smaller tree area.
Yeah. It says find a safer area. Look for dense patches of shorter, evenly sized trees. Avoid seeking shelter under an isolated tall tree. Like, so if you got one tree, you don't want to go park yourself underneath
it. Yeah. You'd be like, oh, it's got a lot of like, you know, branches out there and be away from the rain. Don't go near that one because it's the biggest one out there.
It says stay out of rocky overhangs or caves.
See?
As these can channel a strike. Mm-hmm. Stay away from water sources.
Yeah.
Like lakes and streams. Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. It says this, if it gets really bad, they suggest assume the lightning crouch position. If you are caught in the open and can't find a safe shelter, crouch down low, place your feet together and lower your head, cover your ears, minimize your contact with the ground by balancing on the balls of your feet.
I have heard of that.
I think shit would have to be real serious if you're in that position.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that would be terrible. Don't lie flat on the ground. Is this makes you more vulnerable to ground current, which is a major cause of lightning related injury. So I was just laying there in my flat, you know, on my sleeping pad, just in my sleeping bag, just riding it out. Yeah. We already mentioned spread out in a, if you're in a group. Yeah. And this says stay in that position until the storm passes, remain in a safe area until at least 30 minutes after you hear the last clap of thunder. And again, yeah, it can strike a significant distance from like where your storm is. But I thought that would be good to cover because it's something, you know, massively tragic for these two individuals and their family. And that, you know, as a bow hunter, that sucks. Super sad, but I'd never really read much, never thought about a lot about lightning, to be honest. Anyway, so that was kind of my hunt. You know, I stayed. Porter ended up having to leave. I gave it another 2.5 days, I think, after he left with minimal success. I did have probably one of the best bull moose encounters I've ever had in my life. Did I send you a video?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I did? Mm-mm. Oh, I'll have to send it to you. Yeah, so I sat this edge of this meadow. I was telling you, with three great wallows, and about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I hear some footsteps. I hear branches popping, and I'm like, man, this is going to get real good, you know?
Yep.
And I look over behind me, and there's a bull moose. And I was like, oh, that's cool. He's really close. He's probably 8-10 yards. He's grunting, which was cool. And pretty soon I hear him raking. And then I hear another one. And another one comes in. And the first bull, he walks past into the meadow at like 10, 12 yards.
Dang.
Works in. And I'm watching him. He's not a very big bull. And then I'm looking for the other bull who's worked in around behind me. And then I turn and I hear him raking, and I'm looking off my back right shoulder, and he comes walking, and he ended up walking past me 5 yards. There was one point.
You getting kind of nervous?
Oh, nervous.
Moose.
Legit nervous.
I have been charged by moose. I can talk about the story some other podcast, but like moose are not something you want to mess with and get close to.
He was close enough that I felt uncomfortable because I had my pack up against a tree, and I'm sitting up against this tree. And he's walking towards me like eye to eye. I'm looking at him to my right. I'm kind of side eyeing him. And there's a point where there's a tree in between he or I. If he goes left, he's going to walk up. He's going to touch me. If he goes right, he's going to be real close. But at least there's a tree between us for a sec. He goes right, fortunately. But he walks behind the tree and he walks out. And he is broadside to me at 5 yards. I mean, broad, like totally open, nothing between me and him, broadside. And I'll show you the video, but he, I swear there's a point where he like walks out and he kind of gives me like a little bit of a side eye and he kind of gives me a nod.
He's like, I see you, bud.
I'll show you the video, but he kind of gives me like a bit of a nod, but there was a point there where he kind of looked at me a little bit side eye where I was like, he's legit. 2 steps and he's burying me into a tree if he wants to, but he was a really nice Shiras bull. So that was really cool. And I was glad that, he didn't ram me, but, yeah, so I came home, disappointed, I'm like super disappointed in the way that it worked out. You know, other years it's weird. Like when I've tagged out and I've killed, I'd be interested in hearing other people's experiences, but, I have a pretty severe sense of depression that sets in on me post hunt. It's whether I'm successful or unsuccessful, but I think it's increasingly more so that I was unsuccessful.
Yeah.
One, it's like, I expect to succeed. I expect to kill a bull. So when it doesn't work out, my expectations are, you know, and then I'm like thinking about all the mistakes that I made. I made tons of mistakes, more than I made in a while. I was just like, how stupid. Why'd I do that? You know? You know, one day when I was with Omar, I had this bull that was bugling at night, and he bugled at like 6 a.m. We got up and took off down the road, and he's 300 yards from camp, and we're creeping through, and I look over and I see all of his cows. They're 110 yards. And I'm like, I'm not going to make a peep. I'm just going to sneak up on him. So I start sneaking on him. I get to 62 yards. And, you know, it was like against my better judgment. Like I knew that the chances of them winning me were, possible, but I thought, you know what? I'll be okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't. And they winded me. Like I knew better than that. I knew I should have taken it the wide route all the way around, but I thought, oh, they're just right there, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, the little mistakes are like eating me up pretty good. And I have this like bad sense of depression. It's gonna take me a while to like rebound. But
yeah, I feel for you, man.
Yeah.
Especially when you look forward to something so much all year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, you're in a new area, you're doing all these things, but you have so much experience and still make a few mistakes here and there and it just doesn't come together. And you got to make that long, long drive home where you just think about everything.
Yeah, it was pretty tough. Sounds stupid because it's just hunting, right?
But
that's what I'm currently kind of where I'm at, is like trying to just figure it out and get over this little bit of depression, post-hunt depression.
So I know we'll probably have Porter on eventually to get his take on it, but how do you, just quickly, how do you think Porter enjoyed his first archery elk hunt?
He did really good. Like he kept up, he liked it. I wished I would have had more like close encounters for him to like actually get some more experience, but I think he enjoyed it. Like his spirits were up. He was good. I think he was good. I think he liked it.
What were his thoughts on hearing like bugles and
good
getting experience bugles kind of close?
I gotta go. I'm gonna pee my pants.
All right, we'll bounce.
Okay, I can come back.
No, we can end this. We can end this right now.
I'm
so
like at the point where like I'm legit gonna pee my pants.
All right.
Sorry,
Brady. I'll close this out.
Close me out.
All right, Trails going to the bathroom right now. But yeah, that's Trails. Elk Hunt Stories with Omar, Lorenzo, and Porter. And hope everyone else had some success in September. If you did, send us your photos. We always like seeing some photos of people who are successful. So yeah, send them to email them to GoHunt, reach us at GoHunt.com, or just drop us some DMs on Instagram. And as always, if you guys like the podcast, definitely leave us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. And we'll catch you in the next one.